noticed in your bulletin there, on the notes there, it's, I got a little lazy with the title and just call it part two. And next week, if you can imagine what it'll be part three. And then I'll stop with that. But we are still in this in a passage here that refers to basically one main thing. He started in chapter three with this second theme of his book with respect to the tongue and how we speak. And he hasn't really left that topic, though we have kind of looked at different topics and different themes. It still really falls under this one genre, if you will, of your mouth, your tongue, speech, words that you use, and how we use them ineffectively and how we use them incorrectly. And yes, last week we looked at humility and pride and how that affects my relationship. I just kind of review a little bit from what we saw last week. And in chapter 4, he has taught about pride and how it affects different areas of our lives. Verse 1 and 2, it says, "There from whence come wars and fightings among you, come they not hence, even of your lusts that war within your members." And so because of pride, we see in verse number 1, I fight, and I war, and I quarrel, and I argue because of pride. We get down to verse number 3, we find out that, and you said at the end of verse 2, that you have not because you ask not. So verse 3, you ask and receive not because you ask amiss. And ultimately what he's saying here is that I pray in pride. I pray out of selfishness. And we get to this verse, and we see the third way that pride affects my life, and that is simply that I judge people out of pride. Now, if you were here last week, hopefully you can make some connections to what we looked at last week, although it's not imperative that you know what we talked about last week. But if you simply, apparently I'm boring to at least one person in here, so you can look down and have your own Bible study and start reading in verse number 1. And you kind of get an idea of what we're talking about here. But and just to kind of a preview to see what's coming up, I this week I judge out of pride, meaning that I determine what is good for other people's lives. But then next week we're going to see in verses 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17 is that I live and I plan my own life out of pride. It's kind of the opposite of what we're going to look at this morning, that I determine other people's lives out of pride. And the next four verses will talk about how I live my own life out of pride. In verse 17, even I respond to the truth in pride. But we won't get ahead of ourselves there. Now, all of this goes back to verse number 1 and verse number 2. The passions that are at war within me. The lusts that I have within my own heart. I don't plan these based on what's going on around us. I just plan it based on what the next verse is, the next chapter and the next verse, and I like going through that way, but it always amazes me how when I lift my head up out of the scriptures and I look around the world around me, we see real life, current, up-to-date illustrations of how this affects everyday life. Have we not, if you've checked Facebook, in the past 5 minutes, if you've watched the news once in the last 5 or 6 days, if you've just stepped outside of your house, you have no doubt witnessed that there are problems all around us. Would you agree with that? That there are problems at work? There are problems in your home? There are problems with your marriage? There are problems in this church, in this room right now. There is not 100% of the time that we get along and that we love each other and that we are just always glad to see one another, because there are issues that we deal with and that we have to work with in life. I said last week, if we could find a place of employment that had no people, there would be no problems. If we could find a church that had no people, there would be no problems. But as soon as you started attending it, you would mess up a good thing they had going. You join that workplace, you mess it up, and now there's problems. You join that church, you join that family. If there's anyone anywhere around, there are going to be problems, and James explains, because of the passions, the lusts, it's the desires that you have within you. Now, this is the theme, this is the root for everything that we're looking at, because this is pride. If I had no desires, there would be no pride. But how many of you have a preference about anything? Would you raise your hand? You have a preference, an opinion about anything. I don't care what the best flavor of ice cream is, or who should have been the president, or what the best operating system is for your phone. I mean, we all have opinions. We all have preferences, and we happen to agree with ourselves. Would you not agree with me that you agree with you? I mean, you happen to like your opinions. Problem is, I happen to like my opinions. I happen to think my opinions are better than your opinions, unless you agree with me. And then we can get along. But on the rare occasion that we disagree, which is not so rare, then we start to have issues, right? Isn't that what the whole dating process is? You find out how much you disagree about, and can I deal with this woman, or can I deal with this man, in spite of how much we disagree? Some things are deal breakers, right? She doesn't like this. I love this. I don't know if we can do this. He loves this, and I can't stand that. Maybe we can get over it. Maybe we can agree to disagree, but maybe we can't. And that's how all of life is, and that's what part of growing up is. When we're little, it's all about us, right? When we're immature, it's all about me and mine and what I want. And as we grow up, we realize life is more than just me and what I want. And so as you reach parenthood, that's like the biggest slap in the face, is that it's not all about me anymore. And there's this little crying baby in the bassinet who wants everything to be about him. I've enjoyed life pleasing me, and now you want me to drop everything for you, little kid? Well, yeah, he does. And then as he grows up, I'm trying to teach him, guess what? One day it's going to happen to you. And then you're going to be standing over some little baby fighting like, why can't I have it? I wanted to sleep tonight. Baby didn't want to sleep tonight. I wanted to do this, but baby wanted to do this. And guess who gets their way? Well, as we deal with adults, as we deal with big people, we start having these clashes. We start having these problems and these issues. And it all stems from pride. And James says at the very beginning of this chapter here, that the problems among us are because of the problems within us. Now keep that in mind, because that's kind of an overall thought that will explain what we're going to look at today. It'll explain at what we're going to look at next week, and so on. And it's this root of pride. And James showed, first of all, how these passions affected my treatment with others. We saw that in the first 10 verses last week, and how I want what I want so badly, I am willing to kill for it. I'm willing to do whatever it takes. I am willing to scratch an itch. I got a text this week praying for you, Pastor, about those donuts. I'll have you know, I did not have one donut this week. All right, I replaced it with some other itches, and I got some ice cream and other things. But I didn't have any donuts this week, okay? I can stop whenever I want to. I just choose not to to stop. But it's all due to the issues that I have within me. And when I bring me, along with, let's call it baggage, when I bring all my own baggage of the things that I like into your world, and you've got as much baggage or more than I do, and these things conflict. It's kind of like when a man and a woman move in together, right? You get married. If you were not living on your own before you got married, it probably wasn't that big of a deal. But if you were already living the adult life and you already had your own apartment, your own furniture, and your own decorations and all those things, and then the one moves in with the other, something's got to give, right? She doesn't want his decor. And he doesn't want all of her throw pillows. And it's the baggage that you bring, and you happen to like flower prints, and he doesn't want his bedroom all florally. Oh, well, or he loves the big... Is it a fat head of all the athletic figures that's 6 feet tall in his bedroom? She doesn't want a fat head of LeBron James in the bedroom. But he thinks it's perfectly fine. You know, so this is baggage that we bring with it. And then there's problems. Neither one wants to back down. Neither one wants to give in to the other person. And we have fights. Here's what James says about it this week. Verse 11. Regarding the passions within me that fuel these outward problems, James now is going to show how they affect my treatment with others, but he's going to move beyond that. We already looked at that for 10 verses. He's going to bridge from there to how this now affects my relationship with God. See here, and we're going to continue with our people for a moment and build the case here. I see problems all around me. Look at Facebook this week and all of this week. I did more unfollowing and unfriending of things and pages and people than I've ever done in my entire Facebook career. I just get tired of the drama that is out there. And I look and say, I don't really care what you have to say. Unfollow. I don't unfriend them because I'm not petty. I just don't look at what you want to say. And I just don't want to see you, okay? And not just people, but pages and things out there. I don't care what people think about certain topics. Not because I think that my way is wrong, it's just I don't want to fill my head and my world with other people's opinions of things. And so I had to just remove some of those things. But here's what happens. I look around me, not in the world around me, but in my own little world. You're part of my world, okay? Everybody in Sherman is a part of my world, and the people closer to me are closer in the world of Tim Mingy, okay? And I'm a part of your world, and we're all a part of each other's world. And so as we look around and we see the problems, the natural response is not to say, oh yeah, James 4:1 reminds me that all the problems that I see around me are my fault. Guys, any issues that you experience, I apologize, it's my fault. We don't do that, do we? What do? We say, you know what? It couldn't be me. I've gone along with me for my whole life. I love me. You should love me. I see nothing undesirable about my company. I mean, I've gotten along with me. I've never disagreed with myself. Why can't you get along with me? The problem's not me. Therefore, the problem must be you. But you're thinking the same thing. You're going, no. I really get along with me. I agree with all my own opinions. It must be you. When we see the problems and the issues and the conflicts going on, these wars and fightings, we look to blame someone, and no one ever wants to blame themselves, and so we begin to blame others around us. I don't agree with your choices. I don't agree with your decisions, and the reason that we have these issues is because of the choices that you have made. If you would make the same choices that I make, we would be okay. But you didn't, and so all these problems that we have are now because of you. And not only do I think this in my heart, but it begins to come out in my speech, and this is where James picks up in verse 11. Speak not evil one of another, brethren. He that speaketh evil of his brother and judgeth his brother speaketh evil of the law and judgeth the law. So he gives us this instruction here. Don't speak evil against a brother or sister. This is the one main thing. Don't speak evil of a brother or sister. Now I'm going to replace that word brother in a little bit with neighbor. But it really means the same thing, because who is more of a neighbor to you than your brother? The neighbor is the person who is near you, and your brother is near you. But it could go either way. He's talking about the Christian family here, and we are neighbors. We are near one another, and that's what he's talking about. So it's not limiting to just the male species that belongs in your biological family. He's talking about those near you, specifically the Christian family, and he says, don't speak evil of them. What does it mean to speak evil? This phrase, speaking evil, it means slander. It means to accuse falsely. Emphasis on the false part. It's false accusations. It is to verbally attack or to disparage someone. It means to speak against someone with the intent to harm them, to do evil. It's not just saying something negative about a person. It's saying something negative that is false about a person in order that you might hurt them. Maybe you want to hurt their feelings, or maybe you're saying it about them to someone else, and you're doing it to lower that person's perspective of the person you're speaking about. And he says, don't do that. Don't speak evil. Now, again, why would I do that? Because I don't agree with their decisions. Because they don't do it like I do it. They don't do it like I think they should do it. They didn't come to ask me for my permission or my approval or my suggestions or my advice, and therefore they went out and they made a mess of these things, and it's all their fault. Let me tell you about why they're such a reprobate. Let me tell you why they have so many problems in their life, because they're horrible at making decisions. They never come and ask me. They never seek my opinion. And it's all their fault. I mean, they deserve what they're getting. Let me tell you some more about it. And I'm speaking evil about this other person, slandering. James says, don't do this. Don't speak evil of them. But see, this is our natural reaction to problems with people. That's why this idea of verse 11, he says that he uses he describes it as false accusations for a reason. Because verse 1 and verse 2 of chapter 4 said they're not to blame. Again, understand, please. Why I'm slandering is because of the problems and the issues around me. It affected me negatively and I don't appreciate it. It's your fault. And James says, no, it's your fault. It's my fault. It's our fault. If you would leave the situation, the problem that you experienced would go away until you insert yourself into another person's problems and find that you're the fault there. And here what we have here in verse 11 are two aspects of the legal system. First one we have is the prosecution. We have this one who speaks evil. They're the slanderer. They're the accuser. They're the prosecutor. They're the one standing up, putting another person on trial before the judge and saying, this person is guilty for such and such and such reason. This person ought to receive this penalty. But not only are they the prosecution, they go then and they make their way around the judge's bench and they sit in the judge's chair. And not only do they prosecute, but they also judge. And they say, you know what? You are guilty. You are to blame. Here is the punishment. And they decide what is wrong with people, but they also decide the punishment of those people who go wrongly. And that's what he says here in verse 11 and 12, speaking evil of one another and judging your brother. And there's a problem here. Let me give you two big reasons why we shouldn't speak evil or judge our brother. And they're going to build on each other as we go. The first one is why? Because he is my brother. And I'm not called to judge him. I'm not called to speak evil against him. I'm called to love him. I'm called to love him, not just to whatever extent I choose, but I'm to love him as myself. Love my neighbor as myself. It was commanded in the Old Testament in Leviticus 19. It says, thou shalt not go up and down as a talebearer among thy people. Again, he's basically saying the same thing that James says. Don't slander other people. Don't tell lies about other people. Neither shalt thou stand against the blood of thy neighbor. I am the Lord. Thou shalt not hate thy brother in thine heart. Thou shalt in any wise rebuke thy neighbor and not suffer sin upon him. Thou shalt not avenge nor bear any grudge against the children of thy people, but thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. I am the Lord. That's Old Testament. That's a long time that this rule has been in place, this command from God, to love everybody else as much as you love yourself. We love ourselves pretty good, don't we? I mean, we're pretty good at loving and taking care of the needs that we have, right? I feel like I want something sweet. I'm willing to do whatever it takes to find that thing that scratches that itch. I'm cold. I put on, the thermostat wars that we have with people. I don't care if you're hot. I'm cold. I'm putting the heat up. I don't care if you're cold. I'm hot. I'm turning it down. I'm opening the window. I want my music on the radio. Drivers gets to decide. Parents get to decide. We want what we want. And the Bible says there, Old Testament, love those around you as much and to the same extent and to the same degree that you love yourself. In the New Testament, Jesus said he repeated that commandment. And he said that it was the second greatest commandment. Only less than loving God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. He says in Matthew 22:39, the second, speaking of the second commandment, is like unto it. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. And he says on these two commandments, loving God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and loving your neighbor as yourself. He says on these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. It means that every other law in the book is determined and hangs upon those two commandments right there. They're the hooks that hold everything else up. If you can't get those two right, you can't get any of the other ones right either. Even the Ten Commandments that we talk about, the first half deal with your relationship with God, and the second part deal with your relationship with man. And that's what Jesus is saying here. There are two big commandments. The first one, the biggest one, the greatest one, bigger than anything else, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. But there's a second one, and it's like unto it, and it's the second greatest commandment, and that is to love your neighbor as yourself. They both have to do with love. They both have to do with giving yourself to others, either to God or to other people. And Jesus said it's the most important. They're the two most important. But why shouldn't I slander my brother? Because I'm not called to do that. In fact, I'm commanded to do the opposite. I can't slander and love at the same time. Again, the word slander is not talking about if you did something wrong. It's not saying don't point out what other people do something wrong. It's saying don't falsely accuse people from doing something. If I'm on trial for something, I don't want you as my neighbor, as my brother, standing up, piling on the evidence, falsely or truly. I want you in my corner. And that's what a brother's supposed to be, right? And I think it's Proverbs when it describes the friend that sticks closer than a brother. It uses that brother relationship because no one is really closer to you than family. No one is really closer to you than your brother. No one really knows exactly what it was like growing up like you, like a brother or a sister did. And when my Christian brother goes through this life and you've got issues and you've got trials, it's not for me to judge you or for me to speak evil against you. It's for me to come by and love you and say, you know what, if I was in this situation, this is what I would want. I would want someone to speak truth to me. Maybe I would want someone to say, you know what, listen, bro, you need some help, man. You gotta fix this. You gotta step back. You gotta stop doing this. You're hurting yourself. But I don't need someone to come by and kick me while I'm down. I don't need someone to come by and throw extra on me. I need someone to come by and help me up. Why should I not speak evil against my brother? Because he's my brother. That's the only, do I need another reason? He's my brother. And I'm called to love him. But then he says here the second reason and what we're getting into, how it affects our relationship with God, is because by slandering and judging my brother, I also slander and judge God's laws. Think about it. Verse 11, he says, he that speaketh evil of his brother and judgeth his brother speaketh evil of the law and judgeth the law. And it's not just talking about the Old Testament law. He's talking about this royal law that he referred to back in chapter 2 and the law of liberty that he referred to in chapter number 1. It's the law that is recorded in the scriptures, but is fulfilled in Jesus Christ. So it's not just talking about the Old Testament Jewish law. He's talking about the system. He's talking about doing it God's way. And when I judge them, the word judge there means to make a decision. It means to evaluate. It's, if you understand the term, if I say, let the courts decide. If I find someone out there breaking the law, it is not my place to arrest them, to build a prison, and stick them in that prison and determine how long I'm going to leave them in that prison. It's not my job to determine their guilt or their innocence. It's not my job to determine their punishment. We let the courts decide. We have a system. The justice system will determine that for them. And it's not my place as just an ordinary citizen to determine what's going to happen. Police officers, though their jobs are to enforce the law, it is not their job to determine if someone is guilty or innocent. It is not their job to determine do they need to die right now or should I. They bring them to the courts and they let the courts decide these things. And that's what judge means. And it's not my job, first of all, to speak evil against my brother. But also, number two, it's not my job to determine the guilt and innocence of someone or the punishment that that person deserves. And by becoming a judge of my brother, I am now becoming a judge of God's laws. And by becoming a judge of God's laws, I am no longer an obeyer or a doer of God's laws. See, I decide what should and should not be obeyed then. I decide what is and is not okay, not just for me, but for you. Now, I've been your judge, and I say, no, you shouldn't be doing it that way. I don't think that's how it should be done. I think you should do something differently. I think you should be doing better. I think you should be doing worse. And since you didn't do it the way that I think you should do it, here's my judgment. Here's my punishment for you. And we make up these rules and these standards and expectations for other people that honestly we ourselves can't even keep. And God says, when you start judging your brother, you start judging his law, saying, no, that's not harsh enough. That's not good enough. I've got a better way for you to do things. Do it my way. My vigilante justice punishes according to my own standards and expectations. By slandering and judging my neighbor, I usurp God's authority as the lawgiver and judge. And that's why verse number 12 says that there is one lawgiver. There's only one, and it ain't you. You ever been told as a kid, stop being your brother's parent? You ever been told, stop being your mother's boss or your you ever tried to boss your authority around until they say, hey, who's in charge here? Stop. You know, do it. Do what I told you to do. And those of you in the military, if you were a private, you didn't walk up to the sergeant and start telling him what's what and who's what and where to go and all that stuff. He's like, you tell me what to do, sir. Yes, sir. How many more, right? Jump, how high should I jump? That kind of stuff. You don't, there's a chain of command. And when I step outside of that and say, no. Can you imagine? How many of you were in the military? Would you raise your hand? All right, there's a few of you. Those of you who went to military, and then the rest of us, we've seen a movie, at least about the Army. So we kind of have this idea of what boot camp is like, whether it's really hard. It's like the Boy Scouts or it's like, you know, the hardest thing you could ever imagine doing. But can you imagine, we all join the Army. And we're all standing there in a line, and they've got us in our formation. We're all standing there at attention, and the drill sergeant walks up and says, all right, everybody, we're going to go run 5 miles today. And I step up and say, no, I don't think that's what we need, Sarge. I think what we need to do is we need to rest. So I'm going to go over here and rest. Those of you, you guys need to come with me. Excuse me. Who's in charge here? You know, and you guys running. I can't believe you do that. There's the problem right there. You guys don't agree with me. You guys are going the wrong. There's issues now, and it's all your fault because you went running with the sergeant instead of listening to me. I know what's best for you. You need a nap. I'm not going to be in good graces with the Sarge. I'm not going to be in good graces with the authority. But those of you who follow me are also not as well. And that's what James is saying here. That's what you've done with God. God says, this is what you need to do. His word tells us all that we need to do to live the Christian life. I don't like what you're doing. And I look and say, you know what? I know that the Bible says it's okay, but you're doing something that I don't think is okay. Or I know that you're doing something that the Bible doesn't really speak of, or you're doing something that the Bible says you shouldn't do, but I don't think it's really wrong. So what I do is I step outside of that chain of command and I say, no, new boss right here. You know what that's called? It's called mutiny. It's called a coup. It's when you step against the leadership of God and you try to replace the authority with your own. And God says that's what happens every single time that we judge. And every single time that we slander against our brothers. But let me show you how it connects with pride. Because I have pride in my heart, I won't admit that God makes the laws and judges those who break them. Because I'm one of those people. If I understand and I recognize that God is the judge, then I recognize that I'm under his authority. That's why just a few verses ago, he spoke about submitting to God, putting yourself under his authority. I don't like that. I like being my own boss. I like doing what I want to do. I like doing it how I think it should be done. I don't like your ways simply for the fact, have you ever been told to do something by someone and you were going to do it anyways, but now that someone told you to do it, you're not going to do it? You thought it was a good idea until someone told you to do it, and now you're like, that's the worst idea ever. If you'd have waited 5 seconds, I would have done this on my own because I recognize it's a good thing to do, but now since you told me, we don't like being told what to do, do we? Especially guys. We don't want anybody. That's a lot of problems that I found in the schools, in the high school especially. Most of the problems in the classroom had to do with guys not wanting to be told what to do. I want to do it my way. I don't care if I don't understand how to do it. I'll do it my way. You understand anything about algebra? No, but I'll figure it out. And usually, who's the teacher? Usually a woman, isn't it? We don't like girls telling us what to do. It's that male chauvinism inside us. I don't want you telling me what to do. We don't even want guys telling us what to do sometimes. Don't tell me how to do it. I already know. Have you ever tried to coach older people, like teenagers and stuff? The best people to coach are the people who have no idea what's going on. Because they don't come with an attitude of, you can't teach me anything. But if I've been playing for years, and hey, you're 40. You can't even do what I can do. I'm not listening to you. You can't coach me. Those are the hardest people to coach because they don't want to submit. They don't want to be told what to do. They want to do it their way. And if you're a basketball coach and you got five people out there doing their own thing, you don't really get anywhere. I don't care how talented they are. They don't go anywhere. They don't accomplish anything because they don't submit. They do their own thing and there's problems. And you ever played with someone like that? They're constantly pointing out everyone else's issues while they're playing the game. Come on! Why'd you do that? You're like, dude, calm down. What is that? Because there's too many bosses. There's too many authorities and no one wants to submit. And that's because of pride. Because of pride, I resist God's authority and His judgment. This is exactly what Lucifer's sin was in heaven, Isaiah 14. And it's exactly what Adam and Eve's sin was in the garden. Don't eat the fruit. Is there any part of that command, the only rule in the whole world, was don't eat the fruit of one tree? I'm in Adam. I would have eaten the fruit just as much as he would. But I'd like to think that I could follow that rule pretty easily. Here's the rule. Don't sit in this pew when you come to church. Only rule there is in the whole world. Don't sit in that pew. And guess what we do as people? I'm sitting in that pew. I don't care if there's 5,000 other pews to sit in. I'm sitting in that pew. Why? Because you ain't telling me what to do. And that's exactly how the serpent got Eve to sin, is he said, did God say you can't eat that fruit? He goes, well, God said we shouldn't eat it or touch it unless we're going to die. And the serpent begins to work on her pride and say, you know what? God is afraid. He's got an image complex. He is afraid that if you eat the fruit, you're going to be wise just like he is, and then he's going to be no better than you. And so he's keeping things back from you. You deserve more, Eve. You deserve to have this knowledge. You're a beautiful woman. You're a strong, independent woman. You deserve this. And the Bible says that she looked at it, and she saw that it looked good. It was pleasing to the eyes. It was all about what she thought. And she casts aside what God says and acted and operated on what she thought. She ate the fruit. And it doesn't go into much detail, but then it just says she gave it to her husband and he ate. She didn't force him, but he did the same thing. He looked at the fruit. The Bible tells us, I think it's Galatians, that the man was not deceived, but the woman was deceived. Man willingly knew what he was doing. He ate the fruit. Why? Because I wanted to. I chose to eat this, we call it an apple. I don't know what it was. I chose to eat this fruit. Why? Didn't you know that there was a rule that you shouldn't? Yeah, I did, but I wanted to anyways. What are you going to do about it? That's the attitude that existed before in heaven. It's the attitude that existed before we were around. And it's the attitude that we are so good at perpetuating. And those of you who have kids, you know that you didn't teach them to be selfish and to be proud and to want their own way above your way, and yet they somehow inherit it from us. And our parents didn't ever teach us that, but we're pretty good at rebelling against their authority too. It's to varying degrees, but it always comes back to, I want to do what I want to do. And it goes, and then it stems from there and says, I want you to do what I want to be done. That's pride. God is the lawgiver. God is the judge. Peter David says, usurping God's judging authority by judging a person is really a blasphemy of God. We blaspheme the name of God when we say, you know what? I can be God better than you can be God. I will do it my way. So James asks this question. I like this. I like how he finishes his little section here. Who art thou that judgest another? And as he's laid out the facts and he's been pounding this thing of pride, he finishes with this little question. He's gonna kind of ask that same kind of question in the next section about what is your life. But here he's going to say, who are you to judge your neighbor? Ask yourself that question. Who are you? Who do you think you are to judge your neighbor? And what this is a call for us, for each of us, to look inward, to self-inspect, and get a pretty accurate picture of my own brokenness. Because if I would truly take a look at me, if I could look in a mirror that would not show me the outside of me, but show me who the real me is, I would be disgusted. And if you could see who you really are in the eyes of God, that He who is holy and perfect and just, and then we see ourselves and we go, oh, They don't like that. We talked about in chapter 1, we look in the perfect law of liberty and we say, no. And we go away and we forget who we really are. We go on in our ignorance because ignorance is bliss. James says, take a look. Stop. You want to be the boss? You want to be the judge? Who are you to be the judge of another person? I want to read Romans chapter 14. This has been just kind of echoing in the back of my mind all week as I read James 11 and James 4, 11 and 12. The whole chapter, and I encourage you sometime to read the whole chapter, and I won't read the whole thing, but this is basically Paul's chapter on Christian liberty. And Paul is speaking about weaker brothers and not causing an offense on there. But we go to verse 4. He says kind of the same thing that James said. Who art thou that judgest another man's servant? To his own master he standeth or falleth. Yea, he shall be holden up, for God is able to make him stand. Now, if you're a Christian, that then by definition, that means that you are God's servant. He is the master, right? He is the Lord. You are the servant. And so if you're a Christian, and I'm a Christian, and I'm judging you, Paul says, who are you to judge God's servant? It's not your servant. If he was your servant, you could judge him. But you're not my servant. So I don't get the privilege or the right or whatever you want to call it to judge you. That's God's job, because if I see you doing something that I don't think you should be doing, that's his job to mess with. That's his mess to deal with. But I'm also his servant. I got my own messes to deal with, and it's God's job to deal with me. And that's why it says at the end of verse 4, to his own master he standeth or falleth. Yea, he shall be holding up, for God is able to make him stand. Verse number 7, he says, for none of us liveth to himself, and no man dieth to himself. For whether we live unto the Lord. Whether we die unto the Lord. Whether we live, therefore, or die, we are the Lord's. We belong to God. Because we are in Christ, we belong to him. He told the Corinthians, you're not your own. You were bought with a price. You belong to God. And therefore, since you don't belong to me, I don't have any right to judge you. I have no case to present against you, to slander you, or to cast judgment upon you. I leave that to God. That's what Jesus meant in Matthew 7. Read that sometime. When he talked about, you're trying to take care of the little splinter in somebody's eye, and you got a big old 2x4 sticking out of your own eye. Stop trying to judge people. Can you imagine, if we could really illustrate that? Someone with a beam sticking out of their head? How close can you get to someone to pull the little splinter out of their eye? I'm going to do a lot of damage as I'm walking around with this big old stick sticking out of my eyeball, and I'm totally ignorant of that, and I'm looking at the smallest little details of your life trying to make you a better person, going, you better get to the hospital. You got some problems yourself. That's what we do spiritually. That's what Jesus was saying. He started it off with, judge not that you be not judged. Now, it's not saying that we're never to judge people. It's not saying that. But what he's saying here is that we should not hold people to our own standards and expectations. We should hold ourselves, first of all myself, and others to God's expectations. What does God say? If God says it, then that's what we do. That's what the police do. Police arrest me because I broke a law. I didn't break their law, but they're there to enforce that law and to put me through the system, if you will, and let the courts decide. They're not judging me. They're not slandering me. They might be there to say I was there, I saw him break the law, and they're helping the prosecution out, but they're not speaking evil of me. And they're not saying, and I think that he needs to be hung by his neck till dead. They're there to protect me, really. They're there to help me or protect other people. And so let us not hold our brothers and sisters to our own standards and expectations. Let's hold them and ourselves to God. Here, when people fail you, it doesn't mean that they're wrong. When people let you down, don't assume that they did something wrong, that they sinned. Show love. When people fail God's law, yeah, they're wrong. But it's not for me to judge that. So when people fail God's law, let us love them and treat them how we would want to be treated. Have you ever broken God's law? How do you want to be treated? If we found out what you did this week, how would you want us to treat you? Then treat others that way when you find out what they did. I think sometimes we are quick. There's some questions there for you to look at, maybe discuss sometime, or just at least consider. I think sometimes, remember when we were kids and our parents taught us about bullies? And they told us that bullies usually pick on others because they're insecure about themselves. And I think sometimes we do that in Christianity. I am totally insecure and terrified that you will find out who I really am. And so I'm going to do what I can to keep the attention off of me, and I'm going to look for someone else to protect me from your attention and your inspection. And so I'm going to look at you and say, ooh, I can't believe they did. Can you believe that they did that? All the while, keeping your attention on him, don't look at me. Because if you looked at me, you saw who I was, you'd be disappointed at the very least. God says, listen, he's another man's servant. He is my servant. I will deal with him. You are my servant. I will deal with you. Let us not speak evil or judge because of out of pride. Let God take care of those things. Let God do God's job. Have you ever stopped and just thought, if I were God, if God decided he was going to go on vacation for a day and he called you up. I know this is not theologically sound, okay? But just bear with me, okay? If God called you up and said, listen, I'm going to take a day off. Ben, since time began, I haven't had a day off and I need one, okay? I want you to take over for one day. How quickly would you mess everything up? I mean, I can't even keep my own life straight. And I'm supposed to know everything there is to know about you and love. I was blasted this week with the realization. I live in the smallest town I've ever lived in, and almost every week I meet someone who lives in this town I've never met. And this is a town of less than 1,000 people, and I still don't know them. And I think, God, this is like a super small speck of the world, and you know everybody in the whole world, and not just currently living, but those who lived and those who will live. How do you do this? How do you keep it all together? And when I think about that, I think, God, I'm so glad that you are God and not me. Because you know what I would do? If I were God, I would make it so much simpler because I couldn't keep track of it all. And instead of giving mercy, I would just say, listen, you mess up, all right, poof, you're done. Judgment, fiery judgment. And since I know the future now because I'm God for a day, you're going to mess me up, poof, and I just destroy the whole world and start all over. So when Moses and God would have those conversations on the mountain, and sometimes God would say, I'm going to destroy them all, and Moses would pray for mercy, but there were other times when Moses would come to God and say, God, just kill them all. That's how we act when we try to be God. We get so frustrated when we see so many different people with so many different lives. It's so much easier to say, bing, bing. That's how God kills people. Bing. So much easier that way. And we would very quickly have a world with nobody left but ourselves. And then, because you are God for that one day, you would see who you really are. And just as quickly, you turn yourself and send yourself to the same place you sent everybody else. I'm so thankful that God is God, that I am not trying to run this, because I don't have the mercy that God has. I don't have the long suffering. I don't have the patience. I don't have the wisdom. I don't have the perfect justice that God has. And so you know what? I'm going to do you a favor and try not to judge you. And I would appreciate if you did me a favor and you did those around you a favor by remembering who you are and remembering who you are not. When people around you fail and do things that you disagree with, show some mercy. Show love. Let us not be so quick to run to the wounded and kick them. What did Jesus say? You'll know The people around you will know that you're Christians because you love Jesus.